Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Quickly, Dan Campbell said that the play on Sunday night where Jared Goff scored the touchdown to start the game and it was overturned, like a flag was thrown. Ultimately, we talked about this briefly maybe yesterday or maybe Monday and made the point that just don't listen to them when they tell you what the space ref can't call.
Right.
And Campbell said that that was called from New York. So don't forget that. Anytime your friendly neighborhood color man tells you, well, nope, that's a penalty and they can't throw, they did it. Campbell said that they did it. They told him that on Sunday night, which made sense. That was my guess and maybe yours.
Then the official.
Because it went so long before you saw the penalty.
After the game, the official refuted that to a pool reporter saying, you know, no, we got a conference and we figured out that it should be a penalty, but. Yeah, no. To me, there's no question. I'm ready to believe Dan Campbell when he's told that.
Of course,
right? I mean, you know, the official is going to try to like not get the league in trouble because they don't want Skyref to be perceived as overreaching or anything. But
it is. It is in writing what shouldn't be
right
used. What that shouldn't be used for, and this would be an example of
exactly.
That.
Exactly, it cannot go back and correct penalties that were not called. That's the genesis of the whole Sam Darnold face mask thing in the end zone 1 week, and then the following week, there's the same kind of foul that gets called after the play, and Joe Buck is asking the rules analyst, I thought that they couldn't do this, and the poor rules analyst, this is where you say the guy's name because I never remember his name.
Mm-hmm. Russell Yurt.
Russell Yurt, thank you, is just like, he's just spewing word salad, hoping they're going to stop him. Like, when do I get to stop talking? Because I'm in deep here. Joe Buck is calling this out. He's right, and I'm going to get in trouble. So I'm not Joe Buck. I can't ride with Joe Buck and say you're right, Joe, because I'm here. You know, I'm not. I don't have that standing, I guess. Anyway, it's going to happen in some Bills game. Just hope it goes your way, I guess. Right? Just cross your fingers that they correct something illegally. All right, I'm just going to finger quote illegally that they're not supposed to be able to fix. They're going to fix something and just hope it fixes it in your favor because it's bound to happen.
I'd believe Dan Campbell on most subjects.
Right.
I'm not sure if he told me that we didn't really land on the moon, I'd believe him. But, you know, a lot of things, I feel like he's the kind of guy you would think was being truthful. That's how he comes off. Let's go to Joe next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, Joe. Thank you.
So I just wanted to piggyback off what Sal said. So you guys asked him, like, what should the team and, like, the fan base's level of panic be? And he was saying that if this was the AFC of, like, 3 years ago where you had the Chiefs and the Bengals, you know, he would feel a little more panic.
Ravens, but, too. Yeah,
the Ravens, too. And you know, to a certain point, I agree with that because – like, yeah, we've looked bad, but we're only a game behind the Colts and the Steelers, and we had the same record as the Patriots and the Chargers. But, like, I also think that should be a reason to panic because if you can't get the one seed, if Daniel Jones gets the one seed before Josh Allen, I will lose my goddamn mind. Like, what an indictment on this coaching staff that would be and management. Like they need that one seed so bad. Since like they got rid of the two seed, gets a bye too. All but 1 year this decade, at least one of the conference one seeds has made the Super Bowl. It's like you have a 50% shot to make the Super Bowl just by getting the one seed. They need it bad. So I'm panicking if they can't do it this year of all years.
Hey, Joe, thanks.
I get it. Would you say the same about Drake May, I suppose? Probably.
Yeah.
Or Bo Nix. Or Aaron Rodgers.
I like this point, and I know it felt like it was maybe going to be a pretty comfortable ride. With the way, you know, 4-0, I'm out front. Kansas City is wobbling. The Ravens got all kinds of injuries, and they're 1-1 whatever. Now they're 1-5. Wow. But yeah, you're gonna have to get yourself back on track here. But it's still out there. Like, you know, I'm gonna count on Indianapolis having this wobble at some point too, and hopefully I can pass them when it happens. Provided I'm also not wobbling again or continuing to wobble. Endless wobble.
So much wobble. Thank you for the call.
All the wobble. All the... No, yeah, stop.
Trevor is next. Hi, Trevor.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thank you for calling.
Bulldog, I think it was you that said, does Josh Allen want it? I think you made that comment.
Jesus, I did not say that. Somebody said that, and I attacked them. I think that's insane. I would never say such a thing. Please understand that I'm yelling because it's offensive to me that you would assert on a show with my name on it that I said something that I am morally offended by.
And I stand corrected because I do believe Josh Allen wants it. 100%. Which brings me to my point. I called the right before week one, I called the morning show, and I called this team a Ted Lasso-like team who was on soft knocks. And that's what this team is right now. They are soft. This is an abomination for Josh Allen. We are wasting a talent. This defense, we have a defensive-minded coach, and we can't tackle. We can't cover. We're hiring back people that we let go because they're too old and too slow. If I see Jordan Poyer on this field, I am going to be so dismayed at what we are doing with this team. We are not going to a Super Bowl under the reins of Josh Allen Coach McDermott. I'm sorry. Josh Allen could bring us there, but we are not giving him the due respect of stacking this team. Sure, we don't have the capital to do so, but why? Because we keep hiring people for $8 million. Like, this is insane. It's insane where we are right now that we get to squabble like this of where that Daniel Jones might get the first seed. Are you kidding me? If Daniel Jones gets the first seed and Josh Allen doesn't, we're a mess. We are a mess.
It's not even Halloween, Trevor. It's not even Halloween. It's not Halloween. I'm hearing you.
It sounds like Halloween.
We got a long way to go.
Yeah, my guy, you lost me at abomination. Tom is next. Hi, Tom.
Hey, guys. Mike and Bullock, how are you guys doing?
Good, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah. Wow, on the last call. Hey, Mike, really quick. On James Cook, you know, I agree with you to a certain extent as far as his first couple of years, the guy, he couldn't catch a cold, you know, and I get that. I understand that. But he didn't have that extra gear either. I don't know what the hell he did, but he, the way he can break out and, you know, take a run in from like 60 yards or whatever, he didn't have it back then. Maybe he's got hands back now. I don't know. I'm just, you know, with our cap space or whatever else, I hope the hell we can get a receiver. I have no idea. But give it a whirl. I mean, try it out. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud. I mean, why not? You know, it can't hurt. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right, Tom. Yeah, I mean, I
throw in the ball.
I don't want, I think, yeah. I don't want to be a team that has to settle for that. My point about throwing Cook the ball on Monday night is nothing else is working. Why do you not have that as a pivot somewhere to try to offset what's happening to you? You can't handle them up front. Your receivers on the edges aren't getting open. Try that. And they never really got to it. So, you know, I gotta live with what I am. And in a given game, even. And in that game, the outside stuff was not working. They had, whatever plan they had seemingly went to hell when Josh Palmer left the game. And, like, that was it. And so they needed a different idea and a pivot, and they never got to it. And, you know, I'm here for that. Like, I don't want to build around my running back either. But in a given game, in a scenario where nothing else is working, I'm gonna try to get the ball to the guy that is the most explosive player outside of the quarterback on the team.
Seems like something that they might want to do going forward. There are lots of these kind of, why didn't you do this in the last game? And that is the job. That is the challenge. And I think it's a huge challenge to be able to do that deftly. So that, you know, might be right in terms of Monday night. But I think I'd be surprised if Cook didn't get 3 or 4 targets against Carolina, you know, having been in the middle of this conversation mm-hmm. today. I think I'd be surprised if he didn't. Ben is next. Hi, Ben.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So after the game, you know, I think myself and a lot of people in Buffalo wanted to call you guys and get on the air. So I didn't have the chance to air my thoughts at that point, which was probably for the better. You know, I've had a few days to sit with them, and there's not many things that have not been said yet about the game, but two things that I'm sitting with, first of which, I was listening to Tasker and Brown talk to Dan Orlovsky yesterday, and, you know, this whole idea of fundamentals keeps coming up, and Steve Tasker was explaining, you know, in his conversation with Orlovsky that clearly there's some sort of misconnect going on in practice because of how much McDermott preaches fundamentals. And at some point we need to figure out how to make these stick with the players is essentially what he was saying. And he was arguing with that we have the guys in the room. But to me, when you're talking about making fundamentals stick to guys that we have, and if that's being preached so much in practice, when does it occur to us that maybe our defensive players just aren't that good?
Day one.
That's what I think, too. Like, your fundamentals go to hell when you're overmatched.
Well, exactly. And going into last week, I don't know, I don't put a ton of stock in PFF, but what I do appreciate is that it'll break down exactly where and why they value certain positions. Every single player in our secondary going into this Monday night game, all three corners and both safeties, were allowing a passer rating of over 100 when they were targeting. Every single one of them, all five.
Well, they did play Rattler.
you're right. And when you're playing quarterbacks that are that bad, it just blows my mind. Specifically, Taylor Rapp has kind of been number one on top of my, you know, crap list for the last few weeks. To me, it makes no sense how we keep trotting him out there. And there's no way that McDermott's defensive scheme is just too complicated, you know, to hinder some free agent safety like Justin Simmons.
Yeah,
being bad.
We got you here. I mean, you're not hearing us talk about that. I don't know. It all just sounds like, what do you say? Word salad. It all just sounds like something to say to me. It could be right, but I wouldn't spend 5 seconds thinking about, you know, fundamentals as like, because it's perfectly logical where you're coming from. Why would that be it? Can be. Everybody's different. Maybe one guy, not the next, but I think it's how good you are, mostly. That's what I think.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for Excuse Me, Mr. Tasker, presented by Total Sports Enterprises, the official and exclusive autographed merchandise partner of the Buffalo Bills. We ask fans to submit their questions for a story from Wall of Famer Steve Tasker. Winners will receive a premium mystery box of signed items. Could be a signed picture, helmet, football, or even a current Bills player's jersey. Rules do apply, so visit buffalobills.com/TSE Tasker. And if you did not win this week, you can check out tscbuffalo.com or activation tents during Bills home games to get yours. Question this week comes from Rick, who says, lots of highs and lows during a season, 17 games plus long playoff runs for many years, takes its toll on the best of players. How does Steve see it right now? Suggestions or insights on how the team rises up for someone that has been there?
Here's the way I'm looking at it now. This is the way it feels to me. The team is when this team is healthy, this roster is healthy, and got all its guys out there. They've got enough juice, enough talent, and enough the coaching staff. They've got everything in place to go to and win it all. They really can. But they've been there so much. They've been knocking on the door for so long. They are waiting for another chance to knock on the door. They're waiting for the playoffs to start. They're trying to get through this regular season healthy, find out who they are, win enough games and all that. The difference is this. If this team puts its foot on the gas and gets healthy enough over this bye week to go and get the one seed, that's where it begins. The question is if they show up less than ready or casual with a casual attitude like they did against the Saints, like they did against the Patriots, like they did against the Atlanta Falcons. The question is this: what's it going to cost them at the end of the season when they get in? They are going to get in the playoffs. I'm still a full believer in that. The question is this: if they get in the playoffs, what is dropping a game to the Atlanta Falcons going to cost you? What's dropping a game to the Patriots going to cost you at the end? Is it going to cost you the division? Are you going to have to go on the road on the wild card weekend, then on the road in the divisional round, and then on the road in the AFC championship round? Or can you get it together over this bye week, get healthy enough, stay healthy enough to win the games it necessary to take a week off, get healthy again at the beginning of the playoffs, and then have everybody come through your house? That's the question. This is still a playoff team, and when they're healthy and loaded, they're almost impossible to beat, particularly in their own building. They showed up flat against a good Patriots team and got beat by 3 points. That's how tough it is to come in here and win. They weren't even ready to play, and they turned it over 3 times. When they're that team and they turn it on and they don't turn it over, nobody comes in here and beats them. That's why you got to beat Carolina. You got to beat Tampa Bay. You got to beat Kansas City. You got to beat Philly in this building. You got to beat the Jets, the Dolphins, you got to beat all these teams that are coming up so you can get the home field advantage and get everybody to come through Highmark Stadium in January. If you can do that, that may be too tough for even a good playoff team to come in here and get done. If you don't do that, I'm afraid it seems all too familiar to me. That's how I feel about it.
All right, fair enough. We're going to get right back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What's your one bye week want for the Bills? We go to Carl in Depew next. What's up, Carl?
How you doing, guys?
Good, good.
Well, you know, everybody's feeling the same. Offense, defense, can't get separation, can't this, can't that. But I think it all boils down to one thing and allows you. I'm a McDermott guy from the beginning, and I always will be. But these ball players, I don't think they've had a good ball game all year long, and we're still 4-2. And I think the biggest problem, you know, is themselves. Penalties, that's the ball players. That's mental. Come on. I mean, you know, you can blame the coaching and this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, coaching's been an issue. And I don't think they really had these guys, like you said, juiced up and ready to rock. And if they don't, if they don't turn the table and get them going, it's going to be a long season. That's all I got to say. And I hope they get them going and give them a kick where the sun don't shine and get them going.
Yeah, right. That's good. Thanks, you bring up a good point, Carl. It made me think of something that was true back in my day, and I think it's still true. And I think fans get caught up in the wrong things. And this may come as a surprise to some people, and particularly in the media. It's not Sean McDermott's job to get him fired up. If you have to have a head coach or any coach fire you up before a game, he's got the wrong players on his team. If you're not motivated to go out and play on a Sunday afternoon as a player, it's you. It's not the coach. It's you. If he's got guys on his football team that need somebody to light a fire under them and come and rub their tummy or challenge their manhood or do something to them to get them ready to play on a Sunday afternoon in Highmark or any other stadium, you're not ready to play in the NFL, period. If you're not fired up to play NFL football, it's not a coach's job to fire you up. You're a professional athlete. Show it. That's on you. That's not Sean McDermott. It's not Brandon Bean. It's the player leadership. It's your own motor that you got to depend on. If somebody else has got to come in every week and get you ready to play mentally, you're a joke. You're a joke. If they've got players on this team that can't get ready to play unless some coach gives them something to grab onto, they're not worthy of the spot they've got on the roster.
Yeah.
Get ready to play. I get all the fans, they're all McDermott saying, no, just shut up about that. Get into the 21st century. That's 1950s football. That's not the 90s. That's not the 2000s. That's not the 80s. Players don't look to coaches, and fans shouldn't look to coaches to have a head coach or any coach step in and get his team fired up. That's a joke. That's a joke. You're a professional football player. You've played football since you were 10 years old, maybe even before that.
And you're getting paid an awful lot of money.
And you're getting paid millions to do it. Show up. Don't give the players a pass because they showed up flat. That's on them. 100%. 1,000%. It's on them.
Which is why I said earlier in the show that the player-driven leadership is what has to get on the ball here to demand more of their teammates, particularly at the beginning of games, because the last 3 weeks they have not matched the intensity of their opponents, and it's put them in early holes on the scoreboard. And that's, to Steve's point, on the players to manufacture that and bring it to the field every single week. To Jennifer in Batavia next. What's up, Jennifer?
Well said, guys. I have to say, I love the intensity. That's exactly the way it should be.
I'll calm down.
I just basically kind of piggyback off of that concept there. And without getting too wordy, I see Keon Coleman as being that type of player. I don't see a whole lot of highlighting on his truest abilities. When he gets air, that boy, he takes it right down to the end zone. I think that he has the capacity to be able to play that. I just think that sometimes those interceptions, and that's where it hits, the ball rolls right out of his hands. It just seems like to me there should be somebody to sort of guard him. I see that the side zones are protected. there's no guarding to make sure he can get that before an opponent somehow wipes that ball right out of his hands. And it's every single time when it comes to Keon Coleman. When it comes to the safety, Cole Bishop, we see him increasing the last three games. We know the potential's there. We're seeing a lot of physical ability there. I mean, with a roll and a tumble, with a punch and a kick, sometimes he gets it pretty bad. Poyer coming in, doing what he do, the eagle's eye. It just seems like, to me, there's not enough coverage at that in the red zone there. Like, there's just not enough watching the peripheral, where it just seems like there should be something else going on down that center field. It's always a Cook that's coming up through with the ball, driving that ball under the center, under a power pile. Every single time, it's the same old daggone play. Like, what is being done as far as a plan to prevent some of these interceptions? The situation with the fumble, it's one thing. You know, we've seen some of them. I'm not going to name the names because I like them. I really don't want to put anybody on the radar for it. But we've seen that ball fly out of their hands. At the time the catch-all should have happened, it bounced off the palm and it fell right down. It just seems like, Why is the grip not happening? What kind of slip grips do we need to put on those gloves to make sure that ball gets caught?
There are just
too many errors in that when they could have, the woulda, shoulda, coulda happened, and it didn't. Something's not happened down that center field where somebody has to be a point. I don't know what players. I'm not going to name names.
We get it, Jennifer. I get where you're coming from. Thanks for the call. Like Eric was telling us earlier this hour, like a lot of the problems have been self-inflicted. Josh has two interceptions, you know, in the last game because he's forcing the ball because nothing's happening on offense and he's trying to make something happen. And so he's pressing to try to give the offense a spark, and he puts a ball in a dangerous area where he usually doesn't, and it results in an INT. So, you know, fumbles, ball security really has not been an issue for this football team on the whole. And then as for Keon Coleman, a lot of his opportunities are in contested catch situations, and they call them 50-50 balls for a reason, because he's probably only got a 50% chance of coming down with it. And I think that they are going to take a long, hard look as to how to put him in a position where it's not contested and where he can take advantage of his size. I mean, Drake London is almost the same exact size. He is not fast. He is a possession receiver. They line him up in the slot to create a physical mismatch, which we witnessed on Monday night. Taron Johnson, I love him, but he's 5'11", 192. On a 6'4 receiver with 36-inch arms, he's just going to box Taron out even if he's on his hip and just catch. That's how he caught the touchdown. Maybe putting Coleman inside could reap similar rewards for the Bills and unlock Coleman going forward. We'll see if they explore that here in the bye week.
I agree with what Brownie's saying. So, yeah, thanks for the call.
Yeah. Where are we going here? We got to go to Bob in Florida. What's up, Bob?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Your question on what's one thing I would like, you kind of answered my question because I was thinking Gabe Davis. I don't know when he'll be back, but he was a very good complement to Diggs. I think he could be a good complement to what we have in the running backs and the tight ends, and he is always doing something downfield. Hopefully he comes back soon. He is, to me, going to be such a major upgrade over Shavers, and it's a shame that we're talking about like the fifth receiver on the team. But I think when Davis comes back, he's going to jump Samuel and maybe even Isaiah, or I forget his name, number 18.
Elijah Moore.
Elijah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's sad. I love the signings at the beginning, how it's working out. I'm not sure. I'm not mad. I'm not down. We did this last year, 4-2. We lost two in a row. And it was the same thing. Offense didn't do well, neither did the defense. But I think Gabe Davis coming in is going to help the offense. I think it's going to make a big difference on the outside. Defensively, Michael Hoyt, I don't know how to say his name, he's going to be something that you're going to want to see. And one more thing, please. Keon Coleman, his game is, you know, you can't just stand him in one spot and expect him to take off on someone. He needs to be moved, you know, sideline to sideline, almost like a slot, like people are saying. The other thing, though, is on those 50-50s, he's getting mugged a lot, and he needs to fight and demonstrate to the rest, like, hey, this is happening. He's not doing
embellish
that.
Embellish a little bit, yeah.
Yes, I think that would help out a lot. Thanks, guys. You're doing a great job. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. What say you about Gabe Davis, Steve?
Well, you can make a case that he might be a better fit than Shavers. Shavers couldn't get on the roster when Gabe was here the first time. If Gabe's the same player, I would expect that to be the hierarchy again.
He's a valuable asset in blocking in the run game. We know that. We've seen that.
But he doesn't catch the ball well enough.
No.
Or hasn't.
A 50% catch rate player for his career.
Certainly Josh trusts him and knows him, but you know that was what you were trying to get when you signed Elijah Moore and Joshua Palmer, guys who caught the ball better. Had a higher catch radius, had a higher catch rate, and who are better separators. Certainly Gabe had a handful of really good games here in Buffalo in the first 3 or 4 years of his career, but they let him walk, and they did it for a reason, because they felt like there were better options out there. Keon Coleman, you're right. I mean, when he gets up at the top, it is a hand fight there, and it is very physical at the top. My advice to Keon would be not so much to embellish what's going on, but to give it back. If the guy's getting physical with you, and that's the thing that most people don't realize, if a wide receiver can be just as physical with a defensive back as a defensive back can be physical with a wide out. Give it back to him. If you're going to get at the top of the route and he's grabbing you, hammer his arm off you, hammer it, and make him pay for it. You've got to be as physical with the DB as the DB's being with the wide out. So that'd be my first a piece of advice to him. But I'm with you. Keon has too many physical gifts not to ignore, and you need to exploit them. And it's the coaching staff's job to find out what he can do. If what he can do, it's got to be more than 50-50 balls. That's all there is to it. If that's all he's good at, that's not enough. It is not enough. Blocking in the run game, okay, that's an extra thing. That's not enough either. He's got to have something to give you in the passing game other than 50-50 balls and fades. We've seen him catch a couple of hard slants, like out of a blitz pickup where he comes right across and Josh takes the snap and zings it to him. That's been good. So you've got to expand on some things. You've got to give the guy a chance to catch the ball without having to go up for it over the top of people. Find a way to get him to do that. And he caught one ball. His long catch the other night was 7 yards or something like that on a quick little slant, and he turned it upfield. You got to give him more opportunities. I will say this, though. If you're a quarterback, it's hard to cut it loose when your guy is standing in a crowd, even if the crowd is only two guys. A quarterback has to feel like he's got a chance before he really wants to rip it. If the quarterback's going down, he's in trouble. Yeah, he'll throw it up for grabs on a fourth down or something like that. But it's hard to find a receiver when you feel like you're always throwing it into a crowd. Quarterbacks don't like that. So that's one thing to think about as well.
You know, to be honest, it was shocking to me. Andrew Berry must be a lot smarter than me or us, because it doesn't make sense to me to trade a quarterback that you think enough of to make your opening day starter to a division opponent that's hurting in that area. But that's just my personal feelings.
Mike Tomlin, Steelers and Browns tonight, the icy hot ball, an icy ball of, I don't know, I was going to say, like, gives him an icy stare. Whatever. They're mad. The Steelers are mad that the Browns traded a quarterback to the Bengals.
Yeah, what is their deal here?
I mean, uh-oh, they gave him a really bad quarterback.
It was a couple weeks ago that Tomlin made the comment when they played the Colts or something, where he's like, man, if they had benched, or I told my players not to injure Richardson because I didn't want Flacco coming into the game. Like, love affair with Flacco recently.
Flacco has been a part of all four teams in the AFC North. You forget his Steelers days?
He wasn't in Pittsburgh.
He backed up.
No, he didn't. Joe Flacco did?
Yeah.
No way. Come on.
I think he backed up in Pittsburgh.
I don't think he did.
Super briefly. Wasn't he on their team and backed up Duck Hodges once, or who was he?
He went to Pitt. I know that.
Is it a preseason?
Well, no, he went to Pitt and then he went to Delaware.
I thought he was on Pittsburgh for 5 minutes. Maybe not. All right.
Yeah, I don't have him on Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. 803-0550.
I mean, the way Tomlin's talking, though, he'll get there eventually.
Right. 803-0550. Baltimore, Denver, the Jets, the Eagles, the Jets, the Browns, the Colts, the Browns, the Bengals.
Okay.
There you go.
Maybe Pittsburgh next.
So that's tonight. All right, two stats for you on Josh Allen and then a conversation about their offense. First stat for you is this. Ian Harditz tweeted this out. I'd like you to maybe throw a guess on this. The way I'm going to have you guess it is by giving you a series of names, and you can take 10 seconds to guess, and
okay. We'll
see how you go. What do Lamar Jackson, Matthew Stafford, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, Daniel Jones, Drake May, Baker Mayfield, Mahomes, Goff, Rattler, Darnold, Rodgers, Daniels, Hurts, Lawrence, Kyler Murray, Jackson Dart, Bryce Young, Geno Smith all have in common? What do they all have in common?
They're all quarterbacks.
Yes, they are.
This is about sacks?
Not quite.
Okay. They all have more passing yards than Josh Allen.
They all have a better yards per attempt when under pressure than Josh Allen.
When under pressure.
When under pressure. Yep. When kept clean, Allen's yards per attempt is, I believe, third in the league.
Okay.
And when under pressure, he's behind all those guys. Lamar, Drake, Jones, Mayfield, Goff, blah, blah, blah. Lawrence, Jackson Dart, Bryce
Jackson
Young.
Jackson Dart.
When under pressure, his yards per attempt is rough.
Yeah.
And then there's this also on Josh Allen from this year, that last year, Allen's pressure to sack ratio, like how often you're sacked when pressured.
Mm-hmm.
He is consistently number one, number two, number three in this department. Last year, he was number one. Best quarterback in the league at when you get pressure on him, you're not going to sack him. The number one guy at avoiding that, whether you throw it away or you get away, make a play, number one. This year, he is currently 17th.
Yep. Tied with Jake Browning.
Pressure to sack rate.
Tied at 17th with Jake Browning.
Tied with Jake Browning on avoiding sacks when pressured, and behind Geno Smith on yards per attempt when pressured. Behind Jackson Dart.
Right.
Now,
he's behind Caleb Williams in pressure to sack rate, who took more sacks last season than like any player I've ever seen.
All right. Caleb Williams might be a good example here. So this is where I wonder about what the offense will do to change going forward. Listen, this offense has been very good under Joe Brady. We know that. They put up points. Mm-hmm. They built a really good run game. The running game is something that helps Allen quite a bit. But is it a leap? Is it an obvious conclusion to say these kind of numbers, when pressured, are an indication that the infrastructure around Josh Allen is not protecting him enough? And if you want to say scheme, you think their players are fine, all right, I'll listen to that. The Joe Brady this year, whether it's what? The calls are wrong, the feel is wrong, they're not using their backs the same way. If you want to say the receivers aren't delivering, whatever you want. The line is the same. The line is pretty much consensus thought to be top five, top three. So how in a year did we go from Josh Allen with the same coordinator, with the same run game, with the same offensive line, went from number one in not getting sacked when pressured to number 17 in that department?
Yeah.
And his yards per attempt when pressured is below average, is bad. Doesn't that sound like the things you have to put in place have been failing him? Now, maybe some of it's him. Maybe he's not seeing things. This happened in the Atlanta game. He didn't take some things he could have had. But yeah. I'm immediately brought back to a Ken Dorsey point. And again, I'm not firing Joe Brady. But if I get a consistent problem here where, well, there are options out there, Josh is just not taking them, that's a problem with whoever is working with Allen. Like, you got to get his head in the right space. You got to give him options. You got to give him players, whatever they are, the proper calls. If he's failing in pressure, we know he can be great at it.
Oh, yeah, some of the best in the league for a couple of years.
Yes,
yeah.
This is how he gets the unicorn moniker, right, is from his performances under pressure and how you can get to him, and then that's when it gets interesting. That's when it gets fun. And this year we've seen an awful lot of pressure. He scrambles, and then what? Look in.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the answer is, if it's a little bit more time, if it's Brady just had a bad couple of games, or they become too predictable. But yeah, they're scoring some points. The last two games, maybe a couple of games before that, to me, I just think you're about to see teams try to blitz him into oblivion. And the concern I would have if I'm the GM or the coach or the coordinator is, listen, if we don't fix this problem quick, we're going to get that guy beat up.
Yeah.
And that is the load management, Joe. People think they're saving stuff. All that matters is the playoffs. You better protect that quarterback a little bit better.
Right. I don't know if it's more time. I mean, he is sixth in the league in time to throw this season. He's hanging on to the ball as much as almost anybody in football. So that would speak to, like, the line isn't the problem, I don't think. I saw a chart yesterday of, like, allowed pressure by position, and the Bills were, like, the number one team in the league, like, from the left, like, from the whole offensive line. Like, right guard was a little bit under average this year, I guess, with Torrance pass blocking, and then the rest of it was, like, above average.
Fine, right.
And the tackles maybe was elite. So consistent all the way through. Time to throw, he's getting almost 3 seconds. There's only two quarterbacks in the league that are above 3 seconds, and that's Fields and Williams, Caleb, and they just hang onto the ball like crazy. What is that? Isn't that I'm trying to give my receivers time to get open?
Maybe.
And it's not happening.
Or
a lot of it does come back to that.
It does come back to that. There's also going to be spots where I'm looking and the menu of routes on this play isn't right.
Right.
I got a 3rd and 10. I'm expecting a blitz. Like, talking yesterday with Joe Marino about this, like, Atlanta comes in as the blitz heaviest team in the league. They should have fully expected a avalanche of blitzes, and yeah, plays were called as if they were not expecting that.
Right.
So it's 3rd and 10. What's Atlanta going to do? Bring a lot of dudes. And I've got receivers not quickly available. Sure, they might take a little time to uncover 11 yards down the field, but by the time that happens,
Allen's on the ground.
Quick pressure is on me, and I'm in trouble. So that's like, to me, zooming out is, man, I got to do something to make sure teams do not feel they can blitz my quarterback endlessly.
Right, because that's going to get him hit.
A lot.
That's going to get him beat, and nobody, that's the opposite. That's the running conversation, right? It's like, hey, I don't know if I want him running this much because I'm trying to keep him fresh and I'm trying to keep him healthy. This is similar to that. It's, I can't let defenses think they can attack him and then relentlessly hit him. Like, one way that you get clean pockets is if he starts torching defenses that are trying to blitz him, guess what they're going to stop doing? They're going to stop blitzing him, and he's going to stop getting hit as much. Because he got hit a lot in this game against Atlanta. I mean, the one play where we thought his wrist got injured, that wasn't a run. That wasn't him leaping over Buda Baker like last year. It was three Falcons were on his back, and he was trying to hold himself up on the ground with his wrist, and that's where he started shaking it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about that play itself, because what does he do? He sees a free runner, and he turns to try to escape.
Like, and there's another Falcon.
Like he has done so many times.
Right.
And it's, oh no.
There's another one.
There are three of them here.
Yeah.
So that can be on, you want to make about receiver? That can be on Brady. That can be on, it could be on Allen. Like, hey, you had a guy here. Why aren't you looking for Shakir, who read that blitz and put himself available to you? Like, what aren't you seeing? And as Allen has, he's kind of said, you know, I know I'm not getting any younger. I got to protect myself, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes he says that, and then he goes and jumps over a linebacker. But if he's thinking that, I wonder what he's thinking about a game like that one in Atlanta. Like, I just got my brains beat in by a relentless blitz.
Right.
And I couldn't beat it. We couldn't beat it. Anyway, 803-0550, if you have a thought on that, 1-888-550-2550. From number one in the league last year, where he used to live all the time, to currently 17th in pressure to sack rate, middle of the pack, and behind Caleb Williams. And the fact that,
yeah,
the fact that Caleb Williams went from disaster sack artist to above Josh Allen in pressure to sack.
Because he was one of the worst in the league last year.
Right. What does that speak to? That's coaching. That's system, that's coaching, that's weapons, that's In the case of Caleb, Caleb Williams, he didn't get new weapons. He got a coach.
I mean, number one in the league of that's played every game, because I think the top two are like Cooper Rush and Brock Purdy, who have not played a lot. The next guy at 7%, which is better, by the way, than Allen leading the league at 9% last year.
Is the best quarterback in not getting sacked when pressured.
Yeah, Daniel Jones, who historically has been abysmal at this.
Yeah.
He always took sacks, and he's the best right now. Man, that's coach of the year stuff right there from Steichen, by the way.
Yeah. Dennis in Lockport is up. Hey, Dennis, good morning.
Hey, guys. Great show. I love what you're talking about. One of the things I think, you know, the announcers, when you listen to the games, they have said one thing consistently. Well, the Bills are predictable on what we do on first, second, whatever down. The other part is you don't see us using multiple running backs and different schemes coming out of the backfield as much. They're going back. You guys, I think, mentioned it the other day. You know, we got to get Cook the ball. We got to get Kincaid the ball. We've got another tight end who's starting to emerge. He use him. We've got these. We got Davis. We got some other guys. I thought they got all these weapons. So if Josh has to do a dump off, he's not using those legs as much, you know. And when he does want to use the legs, it's because hey, everyone else is being covered. He's got an open field. Now on the other side is our defense. I'm sorry, it doesn't make a difference what coordinator we have in there. They are predictable. And what I mean by that, they go to sleep for the first half of the game, and then they wake up in the second half. And that's where Josh sometimes had to play hero ball, whereas the defense was just doing what they should have been doing in the first place. He shouldn't be having to play hero ball. Last year, we've had some issues, but they were able to play better. This year, it just seems like they come out there flat, and maybe by the end of the second quarter, they're starting to wake up. That's way too late. That's on Babbage. And honestly, I hate to say that to McDermott. I like actually McDermott calling his own plays when he was head coach than Babbitt. Babbitt is so predictable, and they're getting and our secondary is just getting torched, and you can see it, and it, there's no answers for it. So on that, I'll leave it to you guys.
Thanks, Dennis. Yeah,
I don't know that this was the game for that, though. This is a game where maybe it seemed like the opposite, that they did change what they were doing from the first half to the second half. They did get better results. I don't know if you want to say they were mixing things up and disguising whatever, but like this would not be the game for me for that on the defense. I mean, right now, I'm wondering about that question for the offense and how predictable they are. That's what I'm wondering.
803-0550. Seeing from Tim Graham's piece in The Athletic today that Allen's on pace for a career high in scrambles.
Yeah.
We had been looking at scramble rate was way up this year as well.
Yep.
Hey. Some of it is
Allen, by the way. Like I'm watching back the play that we were just talking about where he gets sacked by three Falcons at the same time
and he tries to escape and do Superman stuff instead of just dumping it.
Yeah, the Falcons, well, it's not even just dumping it. It is, and this is quick, like right, like you got to know what's coming and there's a lot to figure out here in the moment. But when Josh turns, like he's looking over the middle, he doesn't see it. Again, he's got five guys running routes. He doesn't have time to look at all five players, but Tyrell Shavers is wide open in the left side. Like, wide open. Like, he will get 30 yards on this play easily. And Allen turns his back, and the play's over. So, like, how much of that is on him? I don't know. Like, is that his... That might be his fifth read on the play.
Sure.
And he can't go through five, but that's an example of, like, all right, like... Some of these plays, there are guys open, and maybe that's something you got to know pre-snap before the play starts.
Also, built into it, of course, is like if you're a team like Atlanta, you want to they blitz as much as they do, in part because the blitz, they're trying to get the quarterback. But the other part of it is they want to speed up his clock, right? Get in his head, make it so he's not feeling comfortable. And we've seen some teams do this. That Bills game against Miami where they lose in the heat stroke game, that's a game where they get 497 yards of offense and they only, I think, scored 19 points. One of the reasons why, like we remember them having a good day that day, but they couldn't get it in the red zone. I feel like Miami used to do this to Allen a lot. Early blitzes and then simulated pressure. So you'd kind of speed up his clock early on, hit him a couple times, and then you'd back off and you'd hope the effect was his clock has been sped up early in this game. Let's get him to come off of things earlier. And... You know, Atlanta might think, I think I can take my chances leaving Tyrell Shavers here. When you send seven,
yeah,
you know you have fewer guys to cover. You know there'll be more places to throw the ball. You're just betting you're not going to be able to get it there.
Especially if you're purposely picking out a guy that you might think isn't the first read.
Yeah, because the defense, the offense is predictable or no, you know where the ball's going to go.
Although that might not hold up on this play because, correction, it was actually Shakir, the guy that was open on the left. And maybe he would think he is one of the first reads.
Is that the one where he kind of reads out and kind of he runs out to the left and
runs left.
He's like, it's a little past to the flat. I saw that. Yeah,
it's like it's a flat. So I think it's probably like a wheel route, but Shakir maybe holds up because he sees what's happening in the backfield.
He reads the blitz. He reads it like, uh-oh, but, my guy's in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it's like credit Atlanta too, right? Like Atlanta, I mean, the guys they send on the blitz, you would never think they were the guys that were coming. And they back off guys from the line, but like that's what they do, right? Like that was Joe Marino going through the game plan yesterday. Like they do this.
Yeah.
They do this every week.
803-0550, looking at blitz percentage. The Falcons are number one. The next team the Bills play, where this might matter, the Chiefs are number six in blitz percentage. And what are they going to do to the Bills? Won't you bet they'll blitz the hell out of Allen?
Maybe that's why I look poor. They didn't want to show the stuff they want to do against the blitz yet.
Yeah. Atlanta, number one in blitz percentage. The Bills are down the middle of the pack, roughly.
They'd started really high.
They did. But a couple teams on the Bills' schedule who are high in this department, they'll play Tampa, fourth.
Okay.
Miami, again, fifth.
Okay.
Kansas City, sixth.
Yep.
Anyway, 803-0550 on fixing the passing game, if it needs to be fixed. Whether that's, you know, Joe Brady, another weapon, guys getting healthy, committing to running the ball a little bit more, they're getting Allen hit back there. And Atlanta, I don't know if they provided a blueprint so much as they, you know, are able to. Let's think about blueprints, Joe. You hear often, oh, this team gave the blueprint. Well, Atlanta has a number one corner to throw out on one of your receivers and really good young pass rushers and a scheme that sends the blitz on 40% of dropbacks. And against the Bills, I think the second half was what? It's like 70% of his dropbacks?
Mm-hmm.
803-0550 to join us. More on this, on what you might think will happen with it. Trade headline targets. Joe says there's a couple names out there and a team that is going big game hunting at wide receiver. I heard another team that's going after receiver, and that one might make Bills fans mad if that one comes to fruition.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk a little Buffalo Bills football, shall we? And where this team sits at the bye week. And the clamoring, I mean, even downright demanding for changes to be made by a lot of you out there. 803-0550. What change do you want? I'm just curious on that because I get a lot of these kinds of tweets, at Sal Sports, by the way. Shoot me a tweet on X. I get a lot of tweets. We get calls on a reaction show. but mainly through social media, I get a lot of this. And sometimes, you know, because of a certain amount of characters, the way people want to phrase it. And I generally think that, okay, this is the way I look at things. Fans are going to be fans, and that's great. And that's what's great about fans. And fans can be very reactionary and irrational and emotional sometimes. It doesn't mean you're wrong to want, like, hey, say this guy is playing poorly or whatever. But as I like to say on the reaction show, like, you can't just go and start firing everybody after every loss. You can't do that, right? It's not a productive way to run any business or sports organization, and it's not realistic, okay? But at the same time, people want some changes. And sometimes I get a very general statement from people about accountability. You know, when's accountability? What? That was one yesterday I got. Where's the accountability? Well, look, what does accountability mean? Accountability means when someone steps up and says, I screwed up, I could be better, I could do something different. That's accountability. And when I heard Sean McDermott and Joe Brady and Bobby Babich talk yesterday, I think they're accountable. But to you, maybe accountability is, oh no, you need to be fired. So what changes do you want? Do you want new players? You can't blow up the whole roster. Where do you want those new players? How do you want to get them? I like to have reasonable, rational discussions about these things sometimes. And it's not easy, because it's not as easy as people think just to make changes like that. If you want to make a trade, great. Who are you trading with? Who's going to give you a guy? And what are you giving up? And what's the salary cap implications? Those are things Brandon Bean has to work through. I'm not opposed to making changes. I'm not opposed to bringing in talent, more talent, different people, whatever. There's a lot of things that go into this stuff. Last year, they traded for Amari Cooper, and yeah, it was nice to see, and it was great when it happened. It didn't really work out. He got hurt. He wasn't on the field as much as you wanted him to, and he didn't seamlessly fit in right away, maybe, right, on an offense. There's a lot of things to consider. A couple years ago, you traded for Rasul Douglas. That worked. That was a great move. Rasul Douglas, he helped immediately. Maybe that's something that you're looking at. You can look at every position. You can look at players and say, well, this guy's not playing well. Okay, what's the answer? You can't just go grab an all-pro from another team. I think sometimes people think there's all-pros just sitting on other teams everywhere, and the Bills are the only team that don't have them. It's not the way it works. Doesn't mean that those players can't be better or can't be upgraded. But what's the process of that? And maybe it's coaching. Yes, I know a lot of you want Sean McDermott fired. It's just not happening right now. They're 4-2. They've been through lulls before. Those things are just off the table. They're just unreasonable right now to talk about. You want to talk about it after the season, however it ends? Sure. Even coordinators. Now, they have made changes at coordinator in the past during the season. Just did it 2 years ago to offensive coordinator, with Ken Dorsey out and Joe Brady in. I think it's too early for that, but I give that space when people tell me about it or talk about it, because they've done it before. Like that could, or something you want. Let's get to the phone lines. 803-0550. Let's hear what you have to say about this here on a Wednesday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Mike in PA, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Sal. Yeah, you know, I really think the Bills got to go out and get a trade. I know they're going to have to give up assets to get this player. If a team's willing to even trade you, we're kind of being reactive now in the wide receiver market instead of proactive and drafting one. But I think we're backed up in a corner, and I think we got to go after a wide receiver. And I know we need a cornerback as well, or a safety, but you got to keep Josh involved. I've watched 3 games now where I've seen Josh on the sidelines, and it's becoming a meme where he's sitting there frazzled and just not into the game. And you got to keep him in the right headspace. So that's why I'm going to prioritize wide receiver. Plus, it's more fun when we're scoring touchdowns over a cornerback, which I think we equally need both of them.
I like it. So I think that what you've done for me here is that's the way I'd like to phrase this. Like, what's the priority for everybody, right? You say wide receiver, because you can't go out and just trade for a whole bunch of players and have a new roster. It's not going to happen. So wide receiver. Now, I do want to push back on one thing, Mike. I'm on the sidelines every game, as you know. I would definitely push back and say that Josh isn't into the game. Like, when he comes off the sidelines, the first thing he does is go talk to his position coach and grab a tablet and sit down and look what's going on. You may get a shot of him on TV and he's looking down because he's looking at a tablet. He's looking to see, like, they're trying to fix things after every series. So I don't think he's not into the game in any sense whatsoever. I think he's very into the game. You know?
Yeah, that might be the case. They're just catching him in a spot where he's looking confused and frazzled and frustrated. And it's just, I know the other fans are thinking that's perception, and maybe that's not. That's just how they're portraying it on TV. But I got to keep him involved. I don't know the last time I've seen him smile really, and just be on the sideline. And they haven't shown it on TV. But I got to keep him involved, and I just got to keep that offense moving. But with that said, with some of the wide receivers, they have to go after younger talent. I would see like Chris Olave would be a guy. I even would go as far as to say Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know.
I heard you say that. Didn't you? Did you call the last show and say that?
I did, yes.
Yeah, and I just say, look, that's a pipe dream, Mike. It really is. It's unrealistic. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals aren't trading you Marvin Harrison Jr. It's just not happening. And if you want to give up a couple of first-round picks maybe and dangle that, but it's just those are things that just aren't happening. But I agree with you. Younger talent at wide receiver, how do you get it? You draft them, though. That's how you get those guys. Let's go to Steve in Tampa. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Sal. I'm a Penn State alum, so between Penn State, the Bills, and the Sabres, it's been a rough couple weeks for me here. So I was actually texting with a friend on Monday night, and I jokingly said to him, what if Sean McDermott is just NFL James Franklin? And afterwards I kind of got to thinking there's a little similarity there, right? Between the two of them, they both stepped into programs that were in really rough spots. They built them up. They got them into that national relevance, and they both have a pretty safe floor, I'd say, right? Season to season, and kept you in that national conversation. But we just saw with Franklin, there kind of came that point where there was less and less, I would say, goodwill with the fan base for not being able to get over the hump.
Right, but Steve, the question is, so Steve, you want this now? Like, you want this after six games of 2025?
No. What I want to ask you is, do you think we're on that same path? What's the tipping point, do you think?
I don't know, because I'm not the owner, right? And the owner would be the person who has to make that decision. The owner, yeah. And for me, from every indication I've ever gotten, like, the owner believes he has a really good coach here, and that's not going to happen. Now, that being said, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't answer that. Maybe a season where you miss the playoffs without having major injuries.
Right.
If you get to where you've been the last few years and it ends the same way, maybe that's it. I don't really know what the tipping point is. But it's not happening after 6 weeks of 2025. Let's go to Matt in Hamburg. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good morning, Sal. I just had two quick things. One, I'm not in the fire everybody camp. I think we have a lot of good things going on in Buffalo, but I do think that we are potentially staring down the barrel at having Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, and Gabe Davis all on the field for us in starting roles. Mm-hmm. And that just seems like a 3-year setback. And the other part of what I was going to say, so I mean, something needs to be done about that, but the other,
where
part
would you, where would you concentrate is, first? Where would you concentrate first?
You know what? Honestly, I do go back to, I got to trust Bean, but it's hard to say if he keeps investing in the defense because he's covering up for a bad, if he keeps investing in the defense, because he's covering up for a bad defense. And that's why maybe he doesn't focus on receiver. I don't know what our fix is this year, but that'll bring me into the second part of what I was going to say. With our schedule, with the Chiefs and Ravens getting off to the starts that they got off to,
yeah.
I don't think we need to sell out like the Rams did years ago, but we need to make an aggressive move. We need to do something. The most success we've ever had at wide receiver was when we did make such a bold move for Diggs, and that was awesome for years until, honestly, he got a little older and lost a step.
The issue with that, though, Matt, is you did that in the offseason, right? That's something you do in the offseason. It wasn't something that happened during the season. If you want to do something now, and I'm not saying, I know what you're saying, and maybe you're saying that, do it the offseason, but people want answers now, and I agree with you. You kind of have to think about, I agree with you, that the schedule, the way it's set up, where you are, now's the year, right? Now's the year. And to be aggressive, I mean, to go to, you wait to the offseason, you're past that point. And I think that's where the issue lies. And that's where the, complication is. Let's go to another Steve. This one in Texas. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Sal. I talked to you a few weeks ago before the New England game. It was like, if they dropped that game, and I don't know if you remember it all, I was like, oh, boy, we're going to go down there, and that game's going to be for the division. I sure am kind of sad that actually looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, we all said the same thing. We knew that would be the case, and here we are a couple weeks later.
Yep. But
So what do you think now?
Yeah. I think now I'm with McDermott and Brady, I'm really hoping they can just, evolve just a little bit more and the thing that just really concerned me about this game was that punt from midfield, considering we know the defense is having trouble. And I think that was a, if I don't get this fourth down, this game could be over and I'm going to punt it back. But sometimes I think that, you know, you need to keep.
Which punt are you talking about? Second half? Are we talking second half, the one after Elijah Moore's play?
No, the first half punt when it was fourth and three and they were around midfield.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I mean, you could. When you say, here's the thing, here's the issue I have sometimes, Steven. This is not a shot at you at all. I just want to ask you. When you say evolve, what do you mean? Because actually, I mean, I can sit here and people could think that I'm crazy, but I'm not. But when I say, like, Sean McDermott is actually very, very atop of, like, the, when you, the numbers on when to go for it, when to, like, he is actually very good at those things. When you say evolve, what do you mean?
I think evolve is, you know, when you're in that spot, I mean, I know there's the numbers, but the numbers are taking the league averages and not the fact that we still have Josh Allen as our quarterback. I think from that spot, you know, Dan Campbell's going there. And I think that's playing not to lose is punting from that spot. And you're showing your quarterback that he's got to do something special on third down because you don't trust him to go pick it up on fourth. If he gets short and Josh won't take a check down because if somebody gets fourth and one and they don't pick that up, McDermott's not going to go for it. I think that's showing that you're not confident in your quarterback.
Okay, I'm looking now. It looks like there's a fourth and six here maybe that they punted in the first half. I mean, there's a – okay, here we go. Wishnowski, fourth and three from the Bills 49. Sure, you could go for it there. That's fine. I will tell you this, though. You go for it there and you miss. I hope you don't call up and say, I can't believe they gave the game away right there.
No, because they're, you know, the game's already getting away from you in that spot.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point.
Right. Okay, I get it. It's fine, Steve. It's one decision. I'm just saying, like, when you say evolve, like, this coach has actually really, really evolved since he's become the head coach. It's one decision you disagreed with. It's one decision you disagreed with, and I get it, and that's fine. And you can disagree with that all you want, and doesn't mean you're wrong. And it's fourth and three. Maybe they should have gone for it there. I'm looking at it now. Actually, that was fourth and six. No, wait. That was it. Yep, that was fourth and three. That was after the Josh Palmer. Josh Palmer was the last series before that. Sorry, but I'm just trying to figure it out here, just so we're on the same page. DJ in Lockport, what's up, DJ?
Hey, well, first off, I'm still optimistic about the team. They're still going to figure some things out, but we've had these lulls before, so I'm not, like, you know, pulling my hair out thinking it's all over and done with and blow it all up. But my call is I kind of want to look back and really see how great Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer really were for this team, because I feel like every defensive struggle we had kind of folded over into the next year. But back when we had those two guys in their prime, it seemed like it didn't really matter. Milano was great, too, and Bernard came in was good. But, like, all the same issues we kind of see right now are happening without having two, you know, stud safeties back there keeping everything in front of them. And it just goes to show that Bean can find these guys. It's just a matter of can we find a couple more. And I do have confidence we do. I kind of don't like the fact that he's so ingrained in his job. And the reason why I say that is because he's not going to go out and just give up the two first-round picks to go get a good player, because he's not going to say, you know, if this doesn't work out, I won't be here to deal with it anyway type thing. But all I keep thinking is, man, those guys were really great when we had them, and I hope we can find a couple more guys to fill their shoes, because I feel like that's a big part of McDermott's defense is not having those stud safeties back there doing what they always did. So I'll hang up and listen and have a great day, Sal.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. A couple things on this. Number one, I said Jim, I'm sorry. That was DJ. Hyde and Poyer were signed before Bean became general manager. They were signed after Sean McDermott became head coach, and then Brandon Bean became general manager later that year. I just want to clarify that, you know, timeline there when you said that he found them or whatever, however you phrase that. Number two is, and I know you're just DJ kind of, you know, maybe exaggerating a little bit, and that's fine, but there aren't very many trades mid-season where any team gives up two first rounders for the greatest studs on other teams. It just doesn't happen, right? Like, again, like, you have to deal in reality of how it works. Now, that could happen in the offseason, And maybe you could find it. You could say, no, Sal, a team did this. Maybe. I guess it could happen somewhere. I don't remember in the season that those kinds of deals happening very often. I think the Rams might have did some a couple years ago with somebody. I have to go back and look. Was that Vaughn? What did they trade for Vaughn when they got him? Maybe that was something along those lines.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.